Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Jenna Wortham.
I'm Wesley Morris. We're two culture writers at the New York Times.
I mostly write about how humans relate to technology.
And I mostly write about how popular culture and movies relate to humans.
This is Still Processing. Hey, friend.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm sad, actually. I mean, it's an existential sadness. I'm not going to hitch my sadness to what happened over the weekend, but I was on vacation. The show was on vacation. For some reason, all hell breaks loose in Charlottesville, Virginia.
For many reasons, which we're going to get into.
And I don't know. I feel like we had to come back and talk to each other about it because it seemed crazy not to. What is the point of having this show if when things like this happen, we can't talk about them? And every time these things come up, I get down because it forces me to remember how little people understand about the history of this country that they want to fight for.
Willfully don't understand.
What's going on with you? How are you?
I'm recovering from this, you know, surreality. Is that a word? Surreality.
Sure, yeah.
Of looking at the lawn in Charlottesville of the University of Virginia that I streaked the night before graduation, woke up the morning of graduation on, and then walked down later that afternoon to graduate and then enter into the real world, being transformed into a white nationalist / supremacist rally. Mm. I can't get over that. Mm. Although I shouldn't be surprised given what I know about UVA's history, which is A, that it had its own chapter of the Ku Klux Klan, which also donated money many times over that school's history, and that UVA was once the site of one of the best known eugenics research programs in the country during the first half of the 20th century.
Oh boy. With that, let's actually talk about what is going on right now.
Let's do it.
I guess, what happened? What is happening? We're having this conversation on Tuesday, the Tuesday after the Friday of the precipitating events in which a group of white supremacists went on a march with tiki lamps and high Hitler signs in Charlottesville. That was Friday. And then Saturday, a rally turned into a melee between the supremacists and
the anti-racist,
the anti-racist and the anti-fascist and some other groups that were there to like allegedly keep the peace.
A lot of people were hurt. A woman was killed. And now we're all left scratching our heads going, what's going on in America? What's going on in our country?
Yeah. And I think part of the reason that we're having this conversation right now, like the two of us are having this conversation right now, is that nobody seems to know what to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a camp of people that thinks this is some kind of turning point. I'm not sure for whom and for what.
Right. I've definitely seen online people talk about this being the marker of some sort of larger social revolution, but it's not clear which way we're turning, whether things are turning for the better, for the worse.
Well, first of all, you lived in Charlottesville.
Ugh, I did.
For more than a minute.
Well, I was an undergraduate at UVA until 2004.
So this isn't, like, what happened over the weekend isn't necessarily new to you.
No, I mean, I think what's been really interesting, you know, I found out about what was happening in Charlottesville via a series of texts. My mom happens to live right outside of Charlottesville, and her partner needs medical treatment in Charlottesville, so they go there quite regularly. Mm-hmm. And this outburst was precipitated by a couple of other events that happened in Charlottesville. There was a KKK rally. There's been heightened racial tensions
in May
in that
and
town.
July. Yeah.
In May and July. Mm-hmm. For those of us who lived in Charlottesville, none of this really feels that surprising. When I was there as an undergraduate, there were multiple blackface events. There were racial attacks. One of the first black student body presidents or black students to run for student body president, I guess, was attacked and told there will never be an N-word for president. I looked at her Facebook yesterday and she was just like, of course, this is Charlottesville. This is UVA. This is America, which has been this common refrain to come out of this, right? People keep saying, well, this isn't our country. It's actually the most American thing about America, this kind of racialized violence.
It is America.
It is America.
Like, America was founded on this very thing.
Right. But if you were a student of color at UVA, and I would say during my time, but any time, because subsequent graduates have reported the same thing, you know, it was not uncommon if you were a black male to be racially profiled on campus. A good friend of mine was walking home one night from studying at the library and was, you know, stopped by the police and they took a DNA sample from him to put it on file, which is like a violation of so many rights. And he was a student. They didn't believe him. But you comply, right? Because what else are you taught to do? You're a student. You don't know any better.
Right.
It was a very oppressive feeling place. And it was the kind of place, too, that really prided itself on a certain kind of Southern gentility, which is really important in the context of why Charlottesville matters and also why Robert E. Lee matters. And if you were a student there, it was very common to, you know, people dressed up for football games, boys wore suits, the girls wore pearls. Charlottesville and UVA, of course, is the home and university built by Thomas Jefferson, who's seen as this great founder of American modern democracy. When you're a student there, you get to take a tour of the Jefferson Plantation, and they definitely, there's like a little wink wink nod about his relationship to Sally Hemings on Valentine's Day. There are all these signs that go up that say like TJ loves Sally. I mean, there's a way in which that town, there's a way in which that town.
Sally Hemings, for anybody who doesn't know, was one of Thomas Jefferson's many slaves and his most prized, to have a relationship with her for many years.
And it's part of this larger rewriting of a historical narrative and historical record, right? That slaves had it good and that slavery was actually kind of benevolent. And, you know, it wasn't that bad. How bad could it have been? You know, and that town really exists as a weird fantasy of what it was like to be part of the Confederacy. The campus is absolutely beautiful. Mm. It does have this slow, syrupy feeling of what it meant when America was great again before, you know, and it does feed into this idea, like if you come there and you fit in and you do the things that make you part of the culture, which is very much, there's a very much code of conduct, there's very much a code of dress, then somehow that makes you more American. But it's really subversive and it's really disastrous. It's why I didn't really last there for more than a semester or two before I had to go abroad. And then I immediately moved downtown and just confusing too, right? Mm-hmm, because you're just like, this is the colloquial college experience. This is what we're supposed to be doing. And you don't realize how you get co-opted into this way of thinking and kind of like, you just get really pushed into believing the myth of the South, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look closer, there's a history of erasure and disappearance of blackness in all of Charlottesville, and especially in downtown Charlottesville, where this park is, the Robert E. Lee Park, which has since been renamed Emancipation Park. And by the way, the groups just wanted to move the statues.
Right.
They weren't saying
destroy the
melt
statues.
Them down and turn them into, you know, I don't know, cool like footwear.
The city council agreed to just move the statues somewhere else.
Right.
And change the name of the park.
Which is what incited all this stuff.
Yes.
But I guess the point I wanted to make is the people who believe that this heritage, this Southern way of life, which, by the way, includes the minimization and marginalization of people of color, black people, and anyone else, right? It's not white, are part of this larger group that really believes in this lost cause, the Confederacy, that there was this sort of, you know, they... If you Google lost cause, it comes up that the war that was lost was like a noble one, a heroic one. And a lot of that, in part, was inspired by a speech, the conciliatory speech that Robert E. Lee made when he was, you know, announcing defeat. So it's all weirdly very connected. And Robert E. Lee has become, I think, in a lot of ways, part very emblematic to this struggle for what was once good. And or I'm using air quotes.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it was not good for us. It was not good. But I think that's important to remember, that these groups have effectively rewritten the past, and they're fighting to preserve what they believe was the past for the present, for the future. And the other side of it, you have people that are saying, oh, no, 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 we have to aggressively rethink the past now, otherwise we're going to be screwed in the future. And that's actually really what the fight is coming down to, the way we want to think about what happened in the past.
I think that thinking about the future in the past in the context of the present is really useful. I think that one thing about being a Black American is that you carry that around with you all the time.
Right.
I think you were always aware of your physical place in any space. I'm always aware of my blackness, whether I'm among other black people, and I can feel how special in some ways that is. Or if I'm in predominantly white environments, as I frequently am, and you are very quietly bracing yourself for something that probably won't even happen, but could.
And that's actually the point of those statues and the Confederate memorials that are both very visible and not. There was a huge boom after the Civil Rights Movement to build these memorials because this was the point, just this subtle reminder of the racial terrorism that happened in the past and that it could happen again at any moment. Right. Gone but not forgotten.
Right. So I think that there are really two important events that kicked off this current situation that we're in. Well, I mean, there are three. The first of which is the election of Barack Obama in 2008. But I also think that within that context, I think Dylann Roof's murder of 9 people at the Emmanuel AME Church in June of 2015 in Charleston, South Carolina, that same month, Donald Trump announces his presidential campaign. And he doesn't just announce his presidential campaign. He basically kicks it off with this announcement that Mexicans are the famous now infamous Mexicans are rapists and murderers speech or observation or lie. It sets a climate that never goes away, but the storm clouds keep gathering.
Right. That's right.
They've been gathering for 2 years. And frankly, they've been gathering in the Donald Trump context.
That's right.
I mean, because it really, Donald Trump's relationship to all of this, in my mind, he and Barack Obama are nationally psychically conjoined. Obama becomes elected. Trump starts his birther campaign. The constant nagging question that he creates in people's minds about Barack Obama's
legitimacy
as an American citizen.
Right.
Constantly otherizing him. It really satisfied a lot of white people.
Yeah.
That seed of doubt has flowered, I think, into this awful organism that showed up in Charlottesville over the weekend.
Right.
It's not that it's new, but it is the first active, violent manifestation of what Donald Trump is about, like the vessel that he is.
Has been propagating pretty much.
And that's the part that's really upsetting. It's not so much that what happened is necessarily new.
Right.
It's now you are seeing these physical manifestations in the real world of what was going on at his rallies as egged on by him. In February in suburban Kansas City, a white man shot an Indian man under the assumption that he was a Muslim from the Middle East. A few months later, there was a stabbing on a train in Portland. A man stabbed 2 men trying to protect a couple Muslim women.
Muslim American women,
from him.
Yeah.
Who was just defiant in the courtroom about what he did. "I hope they all die," he said. "I'm going to say that on the stand. I'm a patriot, and I hope everyone I stabbed died."
I think it's easy for people to view that man and his views as an anomaly, as an abnormality, but he's not. It's becoming the new norm. Southern Poverty Law Center reported recently that the number of hate groups in the U.S. rose for the second year in a row. The most dramatic growth was the near tripling of anti-Muslim hate groups, which went from 34 in 2015 to 101 last year. The FBI also said that hate crimes against Muslims grew by 67% in 2015, the year in which Donald Trump launched his presidential campaign. So it's a clear correlation between the two things. And it feels really terrifying to have a president who won't come out and say these are deplorable acts. And so it now perpetuates this feeling of very state-sponsored and government-sponsored violence, of racial terror, that if you are a person of color walking around these United States, at any moment you could be a target of racial violence or racial terrorism that is essentially state and government sponsored. Very few of the people who have perpetuated crimes against black people, whether they be police officers or anybody else, have been prosecuted for it.
Right. That's a fact. Okay. We're going to take a break right here and we'll be right back.
there's something undefinable that beckons travelers back to the greater Fort Myers area in southwest Florida year after year. It feels like bare feet on soft white sand beaches that give way to gently lapping waves. It looks like the breathtaking abundance of wildlife, colorful birds, dolphins, manatees, and more, dwelling in lush mangrove ecosystems and translucent Gulf waters. It tastes like fresh coastal cuisine served at sunset at a waterfront restaurant. What will draw you back to Fort Myers? Go to visitfortmyers.com for more inspiration.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing?
It's actually a really complicated question.
To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building, find an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
I think that one of the striking things about what happened on Saturday was that a lot of the clashing was being done between white people.
Right.
I was talking to a number of people who found those images confusing because they couldn't tell who was which. And that was really fascinating to me because in the history of battles against white supremacy in this country, it's been black people
right.
confronting white people
or, right.
or white state-controlled or government-controlled apparatus
right.
turned against black people.
Right. Right.
And so so in a sense, there is something new about a race melee with featuring more white people
right, right.
fighting each other than black people and white people.
I found it comforting.
It was perversely comforting.
It was perversely comforting to see how many white people showed up.
Because, and this gets to this idea that people don't want to hear about white supremacy
right.
because they aren't white supremacists. But you are white. And I think part of the problem with the conversation around white supremacy is that white people might not feel like they're white supremacists at all.
Or they're part of the system.
Most aren't. But there's a system by which white supremacy operates.
Right.
And it is set up to benefit white people.
Right.
Now, you don't have to be an practicing racist.
Oh, you just passively benefit
from racism.
It's basically just interest on whiteness. Like, so you just collect the checks.
You have as a beneficiary, as a permanent beneficiary of that system, a duty to challenge it when it loses its mind and actively begins to start doing things like taking away people's rights.
Right.
And
right.
actively harming people, which is what this administration seems intent on doing from policy proposal to policy proposal to
mm-hmm.
policy proposal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot more, you know, anti-fascists too in this country than I think we realize. And I think that's why a lot of the signs were making the rounds on social media, there was that older woman holding a sign that was like, I escaped the Nazis once, I'm not going to do it again. You know, and I think that's also closely aligned too with other Americans in this country who are just like, I'm not for this racism either. Like, I think those two groups are coming together in a really significant way, which is encouraging to
yes.
me.
Yes. I'm a little bit of a wimp when it comes to this stuff, like the violence, right? Like, I don't want to see anybody hurt, killed, whatever. I understand that for some people, it took the death of Heather Heyer, who was killed by the crazy person who drove, I mean, I can't even give him the benefit of being crazy, the racist who drove the car into the crowd on Saturday afternoon. It's going to take something like her death to galvanize people to understand that
next time it could be them.
It could be you. I also find it, and this is the point at which I think it's really important to talk about Donald Trump in like a real way, because his refusal to say anything on Saturday was unsurprising to me. But his failure to acknowledge the deaths of three people involved
yeah.
in this and the
yeah.
and the many injured people, the very least a president can do is condemn racism, racists, and white supremacists. The second easiest thing to do as president, and crucial, I would say, is to acknowledge the pain and suffering of people who didn't have to die over the weekend, for instance, but did.
Instead, we got, you know, a tweet from Ivanka Trump, which made her the highest ranking official in the White House to acknowledge.
The failure of this man to lead in any direction it's a travesty of American democracy in the most perverse sense. I would have more respect for him if he went up there and said, you know what, guys, thanks for doing my bidding out there. I'm so glad to see you guys come out.
Jesus. But I understand.
But wouldn't that
Lord,
be something? Rather than like this non-answer. And then so like 2 days later, we get this BS thing where he can like condemns all racism as evil. Right. Donald Trump, you don't fool me for 1 second.
First of all,
I mean, the idea that we can't talk about Donald Trump being a racist and all the racist energy is being directed at Stephen Bannon, who's one of his advisors, and Stephen Miller, who also is advising Donald Trump. That's lunacy to me.
But it feels,
he's as racist as anybody.
But it feels like the beginning of a tide, though.
Oh, what kind of tide?
I don't know. Like purging, like the purge.
You know what? Purge Donald Trump.
That's what I'm saying.
Because getting rid of Steve Bannon does nothing for me. It's not like, I mean, Steve Bannon didn't deny anybody the right to live in a Trump building in 1970-something. Stephen Bannon didn't take out an ad in 1989 to condemn the Central Park Five, who like were accused of raping a woman they actually didn't rape, were exonerated like 25 years later. And Donald Trump then takes out an editorial in the same newspaper saying that the settlement and the exoneration were stupid and bogus.
Look, I know The Rock goes all the way up to the top. I know. However, the purge has to start somewhere, and at least it feels there are now starting to be some checks and balances, whereas before there were none. And if it takes Google and Airbnb and tech companies who have pushed back and said, you know, we're not going to host the websites of these companies, we're not going to host neo-Nazis, we're not going to when the president won't say it, if the people around him are saying it, even if it's I'm the most cynical person about when tech companies and CEOs and various people do things in their own interest, because it's always in their own business interest. But when they make these stands, they're highly public, they're highly visible. They are the most visible signs we can get, since the president won't say this is deplorable and I condemn this behavior. When we have CEOs who are, frankly, the CEO of Google is as powerful as the president in a lot of ways, saying, I don't condone this behavior, I'll take it, because we're not getting much else right now. We're not getting anything else right now.
Well, you know what we got on Saturday at about like 8 p.m.?
What?
Speaking of presidential, Barack Obama went on Twitter.
What did he say,
Barry? He just basically quoted Nelson Mandela, and he had this quote about, I mean, I'll read the whole thing. No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love, for love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. I just can't believe that nobody in that administration could find it in their hearts to like...
Yeah.
It's so crazy to me. This is like insane.
But look, there will be, I honestly am starting to believe though, there will be more Bree Newsoms, who's the woman who stood up the pole and took out the Confederate flag. There will be more Mitch Landrews, who was the mayor of New Orleans, who facilitated the taking down of Confederate statues. And when we were in New Orleans, people were saying to me like, well, that's why, I mean, we need more Mitches, because we're going forward. We're not going back. Change is violent. The transition from the last century was violent, too. This one's also going to be violent. We're moving forward.
Well, we're moving forward, but he still can't fix the water pumps to keep the flooding out of New Orleans.
Ugh,
so,
gross.
I mean,
true.
I know I don't expect anything from this administration, and it doesn't really matter what they say as long as they're trying to repeal affirmative action policy, as long as they're trying to stop people from entering this country lawfully or to escape persecution in other places, as long as they are trying to do any of the other number of take back voting rights.
I know.
From people, like all the stuff that our ancestors like marched and died for.
Yeah.
To repeal those things like it's nothing. I don't care what they say. They can say whatever they want. They can get rid of whoever they want, as long as there are people in place to keep those policies from being enacted, or like to repeal them or water them down. Donald Trump can condemn racism every day for the rest of his administration, as long as he's trying to get this other stuff done that contradicts
whatever he's
any
saying.
Any statement against white supremacy, he
Absolutely. He
is still practicing white supremacy in his presidency.
These are dark times. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. They're dark
No.
times.
I mean,
the outcome can't be this is only bad when it gets bloody. Because the blood is invisible, but it's everywhere all the time. And that's what I was trying to say earlier in a very muddled way about people who are posting on social media, like, white silence is violence. I'm like, my dude, your Facebook post is white silence. Organize a dinner. Raise money. Do something. Support an organization. If you're a journalist, write a story. I had to go to yoga yesterday and really work out some emotions because the number of people posting on Facebook, I also saw, I will say that, an equal number of people actively protesting at Trump Tower. At Trump Tower. I saw as many, if not equal or more, posts from white friends in my feeds who were protesting at Trump Tower, which makes me feel good because I'm like, that is an active action, not a passive one to me. But I need people to take action because the administration is not going to do it. A Facebook post is not going to do it. All the attention that was focused on Charlottesville has energized white supremacists, has energized right-wing supremacists, many of whom are organizing various satellite versions of exactly what went down. Mm-hmm. They're going to San Francisco to protest Google. They're going to Berkeley. The flames are being fanned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rallies are coming to your town. So fasten your seatbelts.
There's a quote from a guy in the article the Times ran today that said, every city needs to watch out. We are everywhere.
I think Make America Great Again is you know, one of the most savagely brilliant marketing campaigns ever. I mean, it's the Sieg Heil of the 21st century.
Absolutely.
Well, one of the crazy things I've been thinking was, and this is kind of grim, but I mean, I think about it all the time when you see these white nationalists co-opt the language of oppressed people. The optics of what happened on Friday with that march with the tiki lamps to me look like a Take Back the Night rally on a college campus. And I think a lot about, like, what do these people, what do they want? And it's kind of a miracle that you and I are even sitting here.
Yeah.
Given all the other people who have died over the course of the last 200 years.
Yeah.
But beyond 200 years. It's amazing, like, they didn't just kill us all and just, like, make us all go away. I mean, it's not so much that I want to die or, like, I just think it's a miracle that they didn't just round us up in 1865 when there was just, there was no more slavery, basically, and just kill us all because otherwise to incorporate us into society would just be impossible. And as it turns out, it's still kind of impossible to get total peace. And of course, they couldn't do that because slavery was a part of a capitalist system, and they still needed the work.
They still needed the labor. Yeah.
But I think about the American Indians all the time, and how, I mean, you and I have, like, cried about this on this show before,
which has also been gotten rewritten in this whole thing where there's, you know, the Times story. There was a Times story taking first person accounts from the various events on Friday and Saturday in Charlottesville. And, you know, someone who came out to support the White Nationalist Party said, well, America's for white people. Africa's for black people. Forgetting that before that, America was for brown people. It's like, so your memory only goes back a century or two? Like, what the hell?
You know, I also don't mean to make it seem like we, you know, freed slaves would have allowed themselves to be killed, it, like, willy-nilly. But
no, but
I think that, it just, as campaigns go, you know, I object to calling these guys Nazis because
it affords a kind of distance.
It creates a very safe distance from actual white nationalist KKK racists. There are a lot of young people. I mean, many people have noted the number of young people who've been out there on Friday and Saturday. And I don't know what you do about that. That's the part of me that feels a little bit hopeless. Like, lost cause in one direction, lost cause in another direction.
Yeah.
I don't know what we do. I mean, I think we cannot forget what this administration is about, no matter what they say in the coming days and weeks about supporting black people.
But on a hyper local level, we're beyond safety pins. I mean, that's my takeaway from all this, though, which is that, like, the situation is as dire as it's going to get.
I don't know what happens now, but we'll be here.
We'll be here next week. Well, that's our show. Our show is a product of the New York Times. It is produced by Jenna Weiss-Berman, Henry Malofsky, Ricky Novetsky, and Max Linsky from Pineapple Street Media.
Our editor is Sasha Weiss. We have editorial oversight also from Lisa Tobin and Samantha Hennig.
Our music comes from the lovely artist Kindness. It is called World Restart from his album Otherness.
And you can find all our episodes and other excellent things at nytimes.com/stillprocessing.
Bye. Sasha, I need a photo for this tweet. What should I post? She was like, God, Dad, remember that photo of you and the babies in the windows? That's the one. Just Google Obama babies window. Mom, I can't. I gotta go. I gotta go work because you guys made me have a job, remember?